Hi, this is Nick Bettens, and I'm here talking with Richard Warner for the oral history, and we are talking about Richard's career as a teacher.
Yeah, and we're kind of doing the last one, which I called Into the Ocean, because it was really my life work. You know, if people have hung in there and listened to the first oral histories, this is a hunt for why and how I became a teacher. But Into the Ocean was... I sort of didn't know it was happening, but I was walking into my life work when I started to teach. Sure, I loved to perform, and I really enjoyed directing. But if you boil me down or you say, wait a minute, you got a choice of one, it would be I'm most comfortable, most alive, most myself, and I think most I contribute most as a teacher. So here's how I'd like to start. Nick, I'm going to ask you a question. So here's the question: You've had a lot of training. You've seen some teachers. You've been in front of teachers have been in front of you. What are some of the qualities that you want or need or have seen in teachers and acting teachers that that you respond to, that you like?
I think I respond definitely best to teachers that kind of level with you and talk about their own experiences and are really willing to be forthright with that aspect of teaching. Because I think teaching in a classroom setting or even like a mentorship situation is different than the experience that you'd get on stage or acting in a scene. And I think that's got to be a different experience. So I really like it when teachers are able to share their experiences doing that with an actor and maybe suggest things to look out for or suggest things as somebody who's maybe a little more knowledgeable, whether it be in technique or just experience being on stage.
Excellent. You know, it is a journeyman trade, isn't it, Nick? You know, that, you know, yeah. Actor teaching started out as a master actor would take a younger actor sort of under the wing, if you will, and teach them, and actually would teach them their line of business. They would teach them the roles they were doing. And that was really how it all started. So there is a mimetic quality to it. You know, I've asked this over the years, and you know what people come up with? I'll tell you, Nick, they come up with this, and you said this. They want their teachers to be honest. And they say they want their teachers to be fair. I thought that was good. Fair. Treat everyone in a fair way. One person said, I like clarity. Somebody's clarity. And that's an interesting, you're sort of alluding to that in the sense of, tell me what you know, what you really know, Jim. Pour that into me because I need that. One person said, and I think this is very, very important, said, I like teachers who work, don't chat. They don't, you know, there are some teachers that get up and just the whole session is about, and then I did this and then I did that, rather than really working, and as they're working sessions. And as you point out, distinctly different than when you're working with the director on stage. My theory is that what you're doing in the classrooms should, in fact, connect in some way to the stage in a sense. These are things that you can do that you can bring to explore on stage. Here are ways that I can help you to prepare so that you can be more agile, more efficient, more imaginative when you get into the situation where you're really going to learn your craft, which is really on stage with other actors in a process that's called making a play. So those are some things that actors have said to me about that. And then finally, one said, and I think this is really bottom line for me, that I like a teacher who listens well. Isn't that pretty cool, Nick? Listens well. And so for me, that what that reminded me of is that you've heard me mention Michael Howard, my great mentor and the person who's inspired me. And in fact, probably the person who has most influence on me as a teacher. And what Michael, I asked Michael when I was going to start my career at University of Virginia, I said, Michael, I'm really scared. Really, I don't know if I have any business doing this. What am I thinking? And Michael said, calm down. First thing he told me was your first year of teaching will probably be your best in many ways. I said, why, Mike? He said, because you will be present. You will be doing it for the first time right in front of them. It'll be a real pure exploration, you and that actor, those actors working the scene in front of you. He says, as you go on, second, third, fourth year, what happens is you have to fight against the idea that you're codifying things, that you're locking in. you're not staying as present and fresh and as live as you could be. I thought that was great, very very much a wisdom. So I said, what should I be doing? Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead. What do you say, Nick?
Well, and great advice. I feel like that's great advice for actors, too. I feel like it's deja vu. I'm hearing that as an actor. Don't lock it in.
Yeah, don't lock it in. Yeah. So I said, what should I do, Michael? Michael said, he said this. He thought for a while, and he said, you should really see what you're looking at, really hear what's being spoken. And I added that over the years. And you really need to be empathetically connected to the sort of the emotional architecture that the actors are producing. You're not producing it, but you have to be a good audience to really see what the journey they're taking with emotionally. So he said, you know, see what you're, and then he said, when you do that, then report back to them what you saw and heard and felt. Isn't that cool? That's really, that's your job as a teacher, fundamentally. So I thought, okay, I'll see what I can do about that. And then I thought to myself, okay, so how do you see that? How do you do that? And this is what my first years were about, discovering how to do that. And here's what I've come up with, that a good acting teacher needs to listen with curiosity, with admiration, with surprise and pleasure, and most of all, with respect. If you can pull all that together so that the actor in front of you understands that's your stance, that's how you're listening, you might in fact get them to do the work that we want them to do, which is vulnerable work. See, for me, Nick, I always thought that acting was an act of courage. There's an actor's courage. Now, it is not a battlefield courage, but it still has some physical things and vocal things that require an actor to be very vulnerable, to be right out there. It takes a lot of courage to do that. And that's the respect that I always wanted to give to an actor, that idea that there's I think an actor's vulnerability, you know, other professions have different vulnerabilities, but an actor's vulnerability is to be seen and to be heard. And that's what all actors want. They want to be seen and heard. So what does that do with the classroom? Well, in my early days, I realized after a while that I had to separate out the actor's craft skills, their abilities, from what I call their charisma. And that is who they are as a person. I needed to almost separate those out so I can make an assessment. Where do I need to work with this actor? In the craft skills, or the idea of giving him the courage or the confidence to really let the charisma, who they uniquely are, come out? And you work on both, but I separated them out a little bit. And I always use these two things. Here's an inspiration for me, Nick. One is Stanislavski. He said early on, it's in Actor Prepares, he says, actors must discover the laws of their responsiveness. Actors must discover the laws of their responsiveness. And that's what you can help them with as a teacher. When you're in a situation, you know this, moment to moment, you're going to respond to that moment in a very, very particular individual way. And yet that's also very fluid. It's not fixed. So what you respond to yesterday in a rehearsal might not be what you respond to today. So you have to make sure that the actor understands that and can be very flexible enough to really do that, to find ways of allowing the actor to discover in the moment, to hunt in the moment all the time, to be curious about every single moment when they're rehearsing and, in fact, when they're in front of an audience. The other one that I use is a Strasberg one that really inspired me. Strasberg one said, an actor must advance their belief in the imaginary circumstance in order to recreate it with authenticity. You have to advance your belief in the imaginary circumstances in order to create or recreate them with authenticity. And you know, what I really always loved about that, Nick, was the idea of advancing the belief, to advance it, that it's, again, not fixed, that you're constantly looking for ways to deepen your belief in the situation. And I hope that you've been in good companies where the whole company, that's your responsibility. So Meisner is talking about, if I'm working with you on stage, Nick, I want to make sure that what I'm doing is advancing your belief, not just my belief in the imaginary circumstance, advancing that. Have you been on stage when actors have done that, to really done that for you?
Definitely. Yeah, getting to be, especially ensemble driven, when it's very like everybody's in it moment to moment, and you're, you know, excited. I think of, you know, the crowd scene in An Enemy of the People. And
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it can be done with a leading actor who just by the very force of his or her presence and their ability to drop in and to really sustain character, it can be very inspiring. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of energy that I think you can help somebody when you're advancing their belief. So that's one side of it, sort of craft skills. The other side is this idea of developing an actor's charisma. And if that's a word, sometimes actors say, what do you mean, God, charisma? I will say, I'm talking about your point of view. What's your point of view? Because I think when actors want, if you want to have a long career, I think, Nick, you have to start to figure out what stories you want to tell and how you want to tell them. What is going to be the stories that really you really get engaged in? There's got to be some stuff that you do because you need the paycheck. Stuff you do because, it's interesting, but doesn't fully engage you. But you're always, your responsibility is to, in fact, bring your own point of view to it. I'll give you an example. Morgan Freeman always brings a point of view to his work. It's always, always there. You know what I'm talking about? It's always there. All the great stars have that's why they become stars, is they have they have really found a way to, that vulnerability to be seen and heard is really part of their charisma, is part of, I have a point of view about the work that I'm doing and how I do it. So his is so full of integrity. Morgan Freeman's just full of integrity. But isn't there a certain melancholy to it too? There's a quality to his work that has that sort of wise, sweet wisdom as he does almost every performance he gets into, including his villains. So that was sort of where I was early on in my career, working on that. And the idea that if you're going to be able to do all that, then you've got to help the actor, encourage the actor, find a way the actor to transform, to transform. And every actor that I like knows how to do that in some way. Some really like to do mask acting, which is really to create the character and not hide behind the character, live in that character. And that's who you're going to present to the audience. While other actors really just use their own personality. That's how they work. They work very naturally and open that way. Both are incredibly legitimate. So that's my early career. That's what I was trying to hunt for, if I put it into words. It's trial and error. I mean, how do you learn as an actor? I'll ask you, that's my next question. I'll just spring that on you. How do you learn? I mean, this is even on stage. You know, if you're saying that it's all a learning process, how do you learn as an actor?
And you've said it multiple times, I think it's all about listening. I think it's about listening to each other, listening to other actors, listening to your teachers, experimenting. I mean, throwing everything at the wall, seeing what sticks, you know, and not being afraid to do that. And I guess really just having the space to do it and feeling comfortable in that space to be able to do that.
Right. Nicely put, sir. I think what you were talking about is confidence, the confidence to do that, you know, and here's the sticky wicket of it. You not necessarily always have a wonderful environment to do that in. Sometimes you have to do it in a pressurized, in fact, sometimes in an angry atmosphere, and you still have to have the confidence to do it. So that's really the rigor of our business in some ways. But you said something about throwing up against the wall. That's it. Actors work by trial and error. That's how we work. It's not failures. You could be doing something and run into a brick wall, and it could be absolutely the wrong way of going it, but it's work. You found something. Even if you found, well, that's not what we want to do. We can't go there. We're going to do something else. That's an amazingly wonderful discovery, very helpful discovery. So, you know, I think that's true. I also would add to that, Nick, is that actors use their senses. That what we are very skilled at is to really do that. And then bottom line, we use our great abilities of empathy. So an actor learns, I think, and I think you've said that, I'm using other words, that the empathetic response, which is, I'm really listening well to you. I'm really understanding that, or I'm in character seeing through the eyes of the in the world of this character that I'm living that is, that's the empathetic response. So I said to myself, well, how can I help an actor to have the confidence to do that? You know, have the confidence to apply their great but natural abilities of empathy. So I started to say, okay, you said it, if I can do in the studio, provide an environment that has structure, because actors love structure, but it's free within that structure. I call it freedom within the frame. So that an actor knows that there's not just something you're in a class and it's loosey-goosey. There's a reason for doing what you're doing in that class. This is the shape of the class, but it's your responsibility to fill that shape with it as freely and as exploratory as you possibly can. So that was part of it. How can I provide that kind of a space so that it's free play, it's exploratory? And then the other thing for me was to enjoy it, to allow the actor to know that this is not, this shouldn't be anything onerous about this. That I always hated the class where you went in and it was sort of drenched in angst. You know, everyone's going to do, we're playing. Even with our most tragical thing we're doing, it should be have a sense of real energy of enjoyment in it. You know, even if you're doing a nasty old villain, you should be wonderfully. You know, when you think about something like Laurence Olivier doing Richard III, underneath that character, you could see that actor was just having a field. He was having so much fun.
Yeah.
Oh, always having fun. Heath Ledger, you can see he'd do nasty things. Oh, you would see he's having so much fun doing them. Meryl Streep when she does a nasty role too. So the other thing that I really began to work on, and it takes a while, at least it did for me, maybe other teachers have natural gifts in this direction, is to make it very clear that your idea as an actor is as good as mine. Your idea is as good as mine, if not better, because you're in it, right? Your idea, but then that's not the end of it. But guess what? It'd probably be better if we worked on this together. If we could collaborate on it, then it might even be a better idea than if we tried to come up with it separately. And that's really fun because see how that helps you to work collaboratively with the director. So that you're not just an actor who has waiting for the director to give them everything. You're an actor who can self-actuate and really offer the director stuff that the director needs to either integrate or think about, or you can do this. I've always liked to see actors when I was directing who gave me an idea I hadn't even thought of. It was like, oh man, that's far better than anything I was thinking of here. You know, and that's always such a pleasing thing because it can just explode open with creative energy any rehearsal and any studio session. So let me tell you this as I go along. In this mid-career, I started to work on something that I eventually called rigors. Rigors, something that you're exercising, a rigor. The first rigor I worked on with an actor is the rigor of introspection. And by that, I mean self-analysis, the ability to self-regulate. You know, some people call it emotional intelligence. There's a sociologist, psychologist call it that. So there's a sense that an actor has a sense of really knowing that that's part and parcel of their work for the rest of their lives, to be able to do that. Not judgmental, just sort of saying, I'm curious about this. I always sort of do this. So is that what I want to do or is that a habit? Was that going to be helpful here? So that's self-analytical to the rigor of introspection, I think is one that an actor needs to be constantly aware that's going to be part of their work, because it's the only way you're going to get better. To be able to really evaluate that. And that doesn't mean in the present moment. You know, you should be there present. You're not analyzing yourself, but yeah, you're there present, right? Right. The next one I would start to work on was what I call the rigor of investigation. And that is to help an actor to really understand what it is to interpret a script. Not just skim the surface, but really take a deep dive into the script. That you're connecting yourself with the script as you read it. You're using your senses to do it. You're using everything you have to make sure that you're connecting with every word and every sound in that moment. And when actors do that, you really see the script come alive, when actors really are absorbing everything they can in the life and the world of the script. I call that the rigor of investigation. And then there are four of them, the four eyes, I call them. The next one is the rigor of imagination. And I've always been one to say, Nick, that you can exercise your imagination like a muscle. You know, if I you need a good workout. And it's lovely when a director, he or she hands you something that really allows you to really soar imaginatively. But there are exercises you can do, certainly sensory exercises. There are exercises you can do when you're picking up a script to make sure an actor really is not just intellectually reading the script, but is actually reading the script like an actor. And then the final one, as I trot through these, is the rigor of investment, what I call investment. So if you go from the rigor of introspection and the rigor of investigation, those are sort of when an actor is developing the role that then they will attach themselves to, which is that imaginative connection to the role. How can my story, my point of view fit into this character? And then finally, investment, which is how am I going to share it with the audience? What is going to make me now know that I need to not just be doing this, I'm doing this for a reason, and it's for an audience to tell this story well. So that was my middle career. And it was trial and error with a lot of good young actors helping me out along the way. I hope you realize, Nick, that that what I said at the beginning is true, is that, you know, I learned from my students. I can say that with a great deal of humility and appreciation and gratitude, that I became a good teacher because I had challenged by good actors. You know, that's what happened.
And I think because you never stop being an actor either. You know, I mean, there's so many parts to what you're saying. It's just, it's making my head spin with, you have to be audience. You have to be director. You have to be a fellow actor to be able to, like, you know, regurgitate what you're seeing from them and how you would see it as an actor. And
yeah, well, thank you for that. Thank you. That means a lot to me, because I do think that everything I've found in this journey that we've been taking together is that, yeah, I'm glad I was an actor first.
Yeah.
Other teachers have different journeys, but I was glad I was an actor first. And then I was glad that almost simultaneously as I was teaching, I was also directing. So that was a tool that I could bring in and make sure that they were distinctly different as I approached. So everything I was doing for an actor coach was to help an actor to get in front of a director and be confident and aware of where they were and being able to strut their best stuff. But somebody asked me once, so how long does it take to become a good actor teacher? How long does it become to become a master teacher of acting? And I thought, well, you know, Ledwell says it takes 10,000 repetitions to master anything, you know. Whether you believe that or not, repetition does help. You know, the more, Michael Howard, my great mentor, worked with thousands of actors. And so eventually when you start working with an actor, all that accumulated experience really, really is very, very helpful, as long as you stay fresh in it. For me, it was always like me saying, okay, I'm going to fix it this way, rather than really, what am I seeing in front of me? And why is the actor doing that? And is there any way I can ask the actor to consider something else and see what that's like? I don't know if it's going to be best or better, but it might be something that would tumble something out that would be of great value. So now my final career, where I might be right now, where I am. And, you know, Nick, I started doing this, and this is something I help my wonderful colleague Erica Arvo and I have been working on when I'm with more film work now than theater work. And that is, we call them the five C's. Helping the actor with confidence, helping the actor with craft skills, helping the actor with character thinking, helping the actor to embrace their charisma, and helping the actor with their career. And then the final one, the final kicker, is helping the actor know that it's all about chance. There's so much luck involved in it, you know? So you can't forget that, and you got to live with that. So You talked a little bit about confidence and craft skills, and character thinking is really that really rigor of imagination, which is now I'm going to really advance my belief in the situation. And there, so I really literally start thinking like like the character. Has that happened to you? I hope that happened. Have you ever had a role where you knew it so well and lived into so well that you're really starting to think like the character?
Yeah. It scares you a couple times.
It does, right? Doesn't it? Yeah.
Wait a minute. Save that for later.
Well, Stanislavski called it being there. And athletes call it in the zone. And it really, I began to do a study of what I call flow. And flow is what we're talking about. Psychologists call flow, which is really basically I know that I'm going to be able to solve this and I'm having fun doing it. And that the challenge, my skills are equal to the challenge of it. So flow really happens when you're really challenged. If you're not challenged that much, you know, so if you're doing a lot of small roles, you might not get into a flow. You're doing a bigger role, flow can happen more easily than a smaller role. And then part of it is that you lose a sense of time. You know, I have actors come off and say, I can't even remember that, you know, they were so into it, they don't remember time. They don't, you know, went by so quickly. You mean it's over? You know, that whole phenomena. And athletes say the same thing. Time slows down or there's a different dimension that starts to happen. So flow is a really essential part of that idea of character thinking, getting an actor to embrace it. As you point out, very justifiably, it can be scary, you know? It's scary because you are now really literally living the life of somebody else in that character. But of course, we all know that it's acting, and part of it, the craft skills of it, is to be able to know how, if you're really into a role, how to exit out of it, how to warm yourself down, how to really understand the separation between reality and what you're playing, even in the middle of something. So, you know, you hear about actors, the brilliant ones like Daniel Day-Lewis, who stays in character forever when he does a movie. Most of us are not that talented. We have to find other ways of doing it other than that amazing actor. So part of what I'm working on now is really this, which is to really take even a step further in really listening to an actor. And that is really getting out of their way. So, you know, I sometimes put it this way, Nate. Early in my career, I'll set it up this way. Suppose we build a scenario. I have an actor sitting in a chair center stage, and there's a door stage left. And when early in my career, I would literally be almost on stage with the actor. You know, this is metaphorically, and I'd actually maybe grab their hand and say, okay, now you're going to walk over the door, take three steps over to the door, and here's how you're going to put your hand on the doorknob, and then you're going to turn the doorknob this way and walk. So I was giving them everything, thinking that's what they needed, you know, everything. Well, in my middle career, I would do this. I would metaphorically do this, which is, look, there's a door over there. I think you should go over it, you know? So I stepped a little further back, not maybe at the lip of the stage. Now, when I got to be where I am now, I'm off the stage. I'm where I should be, which is in the audience. Stage is yours, not mine. And I would say something like this. Actors sitting there, I go, so what do you want to do? See the difference?
Yeah.
Now, what do you want to do can cause confusion. And at one time in my career, I thought that confusion was bad. I wanted to be more efficient in my class. That's a really good space for an actor. What do you want to do? Now the actor has to create themselves and figure that out. And the more they can do that, the more they know the process to do it again. All right. So if I say, what do you want to do? I don't know what I want to do is, no, there's a door over, you know, you begin to see the mosaic pieces of in-character thinking. So that may be the simple way of putting my journey as a teacher. So that's a lot of words, sorry.
That's it?
It's
only that?
You know, I'll leave it like this unless you have something else you want to talk about, in that sometimes actors ask me, so what should I do? to continue my studies. What are some tips for me, Warner? And one tip I'll give them is study your heritage, study the traditions. Make sure you're savvy to what came before you, because you're not going to do anything original unless you really know what came before you. You know, study film, study, and then read plays, read scripts, film scripts, read a play a week, especially early in your career, if you can. Really, really start to understand what the structure of plays are. The more you read, the more that'll become almost intuitive to you. I don't see actors really reading the canons as much as they should be. Reading all of Chekhov, reading all of Ibsen, reading all of, and then start to go further into the moderns, finding out who Terrence McNally was, really finding out what the American heritage was through the plays and also through the traditions of the actors that made those plays happen. Then the other thing would be train with the best. Train with the best. Find out pure forms of training. Training can be, there are a lot of charlatans out there, frankly, unfortunately, sadly. And there are a lot of people that take and have watered down the real basic techniques, the wonderful ones like Meisner, Adler, Hagen, Strasberg. They've watered them down. They've missed how to do it. And so you go to, as best you can, do your research and get to somebody that really has been trained well themselves, has sat in front of a master, has really listened well, and then integrated that into their own work. And then I guess sometimes what I would say is this, love the difficult stuff. I see too many actors sort of loving the easy stuff, you know, getting used to, I do this well. And so, and you can ride on a good career that way. But if you start loving the difficult stuff, what I mean by that is, what do I need to work on? What's difficult for me? What are some of the places where I could really, really be a better actor, be something to do with my voice or physically? What can I do to really self-train myself? Because ultimately, teachers as well as parents, we are designed for obsolescence. My whole task as a coach is to make myself obsolete so that you can think on your own, so that you can be independently and confidently making the choices, not having me whisper in your ear, oh, no, go over to the door and open the door, you know? That's, I think, part of it, too, which is really developing the point of view. And I'll end with this little one. I sometimes in my class with this, Nick, unless you got questions, and that is, I love the, Konstantin Stanislavski had a great benefactor, and he was an art, I'm trying to think of his name now, it'll come to me. But he gave Stanislavski this quote, and Stanislavski loved it. He said, here's an actor's task, and that is to take the difficult and to make it habitual. So the more that you can practice, you can take that difficult, you make it habitual. But then you don't stop there. You take that habitual, and you work hard, and you work, and you practice, and you work, and you make it easy. So now it's easy. And a lot of actors stop there. But Stanislavski said, I'm going to urge you to do this. You work and refine and work. And this is the difficult one. You take that easy to make it beautiful. And so it takes that journey for you to really take and make beautiful choices as an actor with consistency. And I always liked that quote. I think his name was Zelinsky or something like that. He was a patron. And he observed good artists at work. And he said, that's what I saw them do. And I think that's true about good athletes, probably almost any profession, but particularly true about performing artists. So there's my saga.
That's great. It's a lot of great things to talk about. My brain is full.
We could continue this later, but maybe this is the end of our tape.
Yeah, that sounds good. Lots to think about. Thanks, Richard.
You bet.